This is...
Well, here we are.
Felger.
What?
And Mass.
The whole team suck.
Felger and Mass.
Maybe your part in the back is a little bit loose.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you here on a Tuesday. We're on 98.5, the Sports Hub. FM dial in Boston. Simulcast, as always, across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. That's where you catch us on TV. You can also catch us online on the World Wide Web anytime you want at 98.5thesportshub.com. The 98.5 The Sports Hub app is a tremendous product as well, which means something coming from me because I hate apps. I don't app. But I do have this app, and it is easy, and it works, and all that stuff. So catch us on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app whenever you want. Those are the particulars. We're going to start off today's program talking a little Red Sox with Tony Maz and Big Jim Murray. How you guys doing?
Good. So forgive me for running out of the studio, but that I had to take that call.
I know. And maybe we can discuss who that was to and what it was about.
Oh, I can tell you who it was.
Okay, go ahead.
That was the agent for Hanley Ramirez, Adam Katz, whom I had asked to come on the program to talk about his client, and he said no.
Okay, so this was a question I asked Maz. I mean, you want to reach out, you know, from your baseball reporting days to Hanley's agent. Does he want to talk? Because we're going to start Red Sox, and we're going to start with their offensive struggles, and you start to feel this second guess building about why did they let go of Hanley Ramirez, and is that impacting the team? And I wonder, there's a whole story behind the story there with Hanley Ramirez, never mind why he got released here, but how come no one's picked him up? He's free. He's free. And he's a tremendous postseason hitter, as you've pointed out many, many times. So why has no one picked him up? Why has there been zero news? Even just Google newsing Hanley Ramirez gives you bupkis, gives you nothing.
Correct.
Complete and utter radio silence. So that's why you reached out to Katz. You want to clue us into what he did say or anything?
I mean,
tell,
in all honesty, the conversation was literally like 60 seconds. I mean, he has a history of not necessarily being, I don't want to say he's not media friendly because he returns calls, but he returns a call to tell you that I'm not saying anything. So I said, oh. Well, then I suppose that means you don't want to come on the Felger and Maz show and tell us what's going on with Hanley. And he said, that's correct. I'm not coming on the show. I said, how about off the record, which I shouldn't really share with you if I'm being true to the actual term.
This is true.
And he said, doesn't matter. I'm not saying anything off the record or on the record. He then asked me how I was doing, and that was that. Okay? So that's the end of it. But Hanley does, you know, he wouldn't give me any indication whatsoever. But the reality is that Hanley Ramirez doesn't have a job. If he did, we'd know about it. And I find that odd. I do. And I told you know how I felt about this from the beginning, that I don't like the practice of the Red Sox releasing a player purely because of a financial commitment when the player might still be able to help them. I believe that Hanley could still help them. This lineup is thin. I have some other concerns about the offense, which we can get to in a minute. But nonetheless, I look at the lineup right now and I feel like it's getting thinner. And it's getting thinner, not just in the bottom third, but in the bottom half. And that to me is, you know, now look, I'm not alarmed yet. I'm not alarmed by the last five games in which they've scored, I think it is 10 runs, okay, or something like that over the last five. They're 2-3 in the last five, and they haven't been hitting. It's really the first time all year that they haven't hit for any length of time. And I say, time, you know, to me, that is time approaching 1 week. But I do think there are an alarming, and Betts just came back last night, but I do think there are an alarming number of guys on this team that are underachieving offensively.
Okay, so we are going to start Red Sox. You want to join us? Now's your chance. 617-779-0985. Do you have a thought, Murray?
Yeah, 12 innings to beat that a-hole team? And there's nothing else on, so I was like, okay, I'm going to give this my full attention. And I didn't pay attention to them all that much over the weekend, and I even was asked last night in the baseball reporters by Maz, like, am I alarmed by that? This little swoon here. And I was like, no, hey, maybe they just didn't take the White Sox seriously. But this, okay, now this is a real trend. And the longer that game went on, it actually felt like, oh, they need to win this game here. And it's the Orioles. This is the worst team, literally the worst team in baseball. And Maz is right. Certain guys, they're just like a black hole in that lineup. And Mitch Moreland being one of them. And this is where it pertains to Hanley. You know, Moreland, the more this guy plays, the more that he's going to get an opportunity to suck. And that's what it looks like right now. Like, he feels like a black hole in that lineup, as does the back end of it as a whole. So, you know, the Hanley thing to me, I didn't like at the time. I still don't like it. It feels like they miss him. I don't think this is going to be anything long term, but it's certainly concerning right now.
So do you agree with Nick Cafardo in the Boston Globe? Beating bad teams shouldn't be this tough for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Is the headline. He says it's been hard. It's been too hard. And he echoed just the same comments you had. So you agree with that? Do you agree with that, Miz?
Okay, so he's talking really about the last 5 days. Because up until now, they have beaten bad teams. Right? They've done it all year long. So you're really talking about the finale with Detroit, the White Sox series, and last night. I mean, that's really all we're talking about. So again, big picture, do I have a concern? No, they're better than those teams. I'm not worried about them getting into some sort of funk now where all of a sudden they can't beat bad teams for a stretch of 6 weeks to 2 months. That's not going to happen. They're better than those teams. But I do think ultimately we can't compare the Red Sox to this garbage that exists around the American League. We need to compare the Red Sox to Houston and New York. And if you want to throw Seattle in there just based on the one loss record, fine. But to me, it's really about Boston, New York, Houston, and maybe Cleveland. Okay, that's really it, and I'll even limit it to three if you want, because I'm fine doing that. So I look at those clubs, and I say they have deeper, more productive lineups than the Red Sox do. And how do you fix that now? This is why I think the Hanley thing was a mistake. And so Murray and I, you know, sort of touched on this briefly on the Baseball Reporters one night. The whole Hanley thing, the fact that he's not with another team, I find curious. Okay, you hear all these little whispers, and we offered no particulars that night. But you hear all these little whispers about, you know, off-field issues, whether that's with Alex Cora, whether that's beyond Fenway Park. Like, there are, you know, who knows?
There's some crazy stuff flowing out
there. There's all kinds of crazy stuff about Hanley. Now, until I see his name turn up somewhere, one way or another, I have to assume that Hanley's available to play in the big leagues and he's looking for a job.
Okay. Does it tell you something that no one's picked him up? He's free. I keep saying this.
Okay, so I made a couple of calls this morning to try to find out whether there was a sense in the game as to whether there is an off-field issue with Manny.
Hanley.
I'm sorry, Freudian slip. And I got the sense that it's not necessarily anything that's on the radar of big league clubs. That you know. Now, look, I don't know if someone would tell me or not. Like, you know, when you're talking about off-field issues, and potentially those vary from, you know, legal to domestic to any range of issues. People can clam up about that kind of stuff very, very quickly. But the person I spoke with, I trusted. And, you know, I can't remember, I read here in the last day that there was a team that had some interest in Hanley Ramirez, which tells me, or that his agent was still looking for a place for him to land. So it tells me that Hanley wants to play. There'd been some speculation out there that Hanley was just going to retire and walk away. Hanley wants to play, I think. I don't think it's an issue of Hanley not wanting to be on the field.
I'm just telling you, the Sox are in trouble scoring. The lineup looks really thin, and it's easy for someone just to say, well, like Dan Shaughnessy did the other day in his column in the Globe, call me a dope, but I still don't understand about the abrupt release of Hanley Ramirez 2 weeks ago. We still don't know exactly what happened, but it's pretty clear the Sox could have used Hanley in Friday's 1-0 loss to the White Sox. Cora these days regularly sends out a lineup with two or three guys hitting below the Mendoza line. With Mookie Betts still on the shelf, and this was before he came back, Boston's vaunted offense drops off a cliff after J.D. Martinez in the cleanup spot. So he points to Hanley Ramirez. Others, we got calls yesterday on Hanley Ramirez. And so it's a totally a fair second guess.
Sure it is.
I mean, again, the offense is faltering, and he was a bat in the middle of your lineup. So I embrace the second guess. I'm not disputing that. I'm just telling you, I was in favor at the time because I think Hanley's just a hot mess waiting to happen. And I just think there's a story there that maybe we'll find out, maybe we won't. But I think it's telling that he's on the market. A team can pick him up for the veteran minimum, and no one's picked him up. And there's not even news out there on him. There's not even the story I linked to this morning was a week old.
I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it?
So maybe the Red Sox knew something we didn't. And this is actually, you know, the people want to give Cora credit for a lot of stuff. This is like at the top of my list for him. Like, did he help identify an issue before it became a problem and got lopped it off before it became a problem? I mean, that's just a side thing. That's not going to help the team now because he's not coming back.
But you're talking about him being about something beyond him being a pain in the ass in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I'm including that. Don't get me wrong, but I think there could be something beyond that. Yes, for sure.
Okay, so because to me the pain in the ass in the clubhouse thing has always been there.
Yeah, you should be able to. If you think you can produce, you should be able to put up with that.
Absolutely. So now look, if there's something bigger than that going on with Hanley, fine. Yeah, like, that's different.
Yeah, and you're right. If he's just being a pain in the ass in the clubhouse, that's not quite enough.
No, like, and this is why I didn't like the idea of them cutting bait with him. You've loaded up the way you have to win a championship. You have a limited window here, given all the contractual issues and the fact that you haven't been able to sign some of the younger guys that are part of your core. So the window you have seems small. Okay, and then you let a guy go, hits 380 in the postseason?
So I think it's a fair second guess, and it's worth exploring. So that's why, you know, Maz reached out to his agent, and we Hanley's sort of on the table this afternoon. You're someone else that's on the table, and a caller brought him up yesterday, and I'd totally forgotten about him. But I want to explore this a little bit, too. And that's Rizny Castillo. Remember him, folks? This guy comes out of Cuba, signed by Charrington. Just muscles bursting at the seams, you know, just Popeye. And, excuse me, we haven't heard from him since. He was it 2-3 years now in the minors?
Something like that.
He's hitting. He's hitting. He's hitting over 300 with Pawtucket, right?
Yes, yeah.
Last time I checked,
last time I checked, it was about 310.
He's hitting.
He hasn't hit a ton of home runs, but he's hitting.
He's hitting. And he's in Pawtucket. Why not see if whatever he was doing in Cuba, he can do here? What are you missing? You got three, you know, guys hitting below 200 at the bottom of your lineup. Why not? And Maz informs me. I didn't realize all this. Rizny Castillo, for luxury tax purposes, was taken off of your 40-man roster. So he was DFA'd and he cleared waivers. No one picked him up either. But he's still playing for you. And if you want to bring him up, you've got to put him back on your 40-man. That counts against your luxury tax. And it's a money consideration. He makes $10 million a year?
Yeah, that's about right. Yep.
Should we care about that if he's hitting again?
I mean, I told you, I don't like the practice of the Red Sox letting anybody go because of the money. But that said...
So this is just in reverse.
Yeah, so I'd be shocked if they bring him up because I don't think that this is going to be the guy to put them over the threshold.
Because he was DFA'd and not, can he be claimed by anyone right now?
No, I don't believe so because he wasn't claimed. So now he's just on a...
He's your minor league property.
Correct. That's exactly right. That's a good way to put
it. Rizny Castillo, remember him? He's hitting. That's all. He's hitting again.
And to give you the particulars, he's batting .315 this year. He's only got 3 home runs. But he's batting .315 with an OPS of .779. Last year, he hit .314 with 15 homers and an OPS of .857. And in his minor league career overall, .292 with a .755 OPS.
That guy, if he's anyone else, isn't he getting a crack up here?
Well, so here's what I would tell you. Those numbers are hardly all-star numbers.
I didn't say that.
Hold on, I'm not done. But... put him next to what Jackie Bradley's doing out there.
Thank you.
And he looks like freaking Willie Mays.
Thank you. And you gave me his career numbers. Now he's been adjusting to what's going on over here in the States and the training methods and, you know, all the things that you have to deal with here. And now it's been forever. I mean, how long has he been down there?
Oh, gosh. Last time he played in the big leagues was the end of 2016.
So
it's a name you don't even think about anymore.
Never. But... well, I mean, you gave him all that money. He's sitting there. You got guys who can't hit. You're not scoring. I'd like to talk about Rizny Castillo. So those are the two things that we started off with baseball. You want to join us? Here's your chance. 617-779-0985.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5. Sports Hub.
I talked to Alex about yesterday, Alex Cora. We were prepared to maybe go in a different direction with our move. He called me. It was about 11:30 in the morning. I was getting ready to go for a run. And Alex says, I've got a thought for you about what we're doing. And he said, this is a move that I would like to make. I recommend making. Ultimately, it comes into my final decision, but he said, I really want to play Mitch Moreland more. He's a good player. He's played very well for us. I don't think that Hanley is a person that sits Hanlon on the bench well. It gives us an opportunity to keep Blake Swihart and also be in a position where Blake could get some more playing time.
Right, when they released Hanley, they said it was Alex Cora's call, which I respect Alex Cora for. I hope it was. I think it was the right thing. But to get Mitch Moreland and Blake Swihart more playing time, how's that worked out for him, Mass?
Not well. Look, again, now look, Moreland was, you know, had some stretches here early in the year where he did well, but they were using him in spot duty.
Since they released Hanley.
Okay, so I have over the last 25 games because it actually precedes that. But over the last 25 games, Moreland's hitting .253. I mean, there's nothing. That's who he is. It's exactly who he is. So there's little bursts in there where he's been hot. And you know, since the Hanley release, it's 268. So the number's a little bit higher. But I also feel like Moreland is who he is. You know, he got a hot for there for a period of time. But you're not going to get a guy in Moreland who's going to hit 315 all year and be on a 30 home run pace.
And Swihart's hitting what?
Last time I checked, it was a .156.
Buck?
It's still the same. He didn't play last night.
.156.
Yeah. And to me, this is now amplified by the fact that when you go through the lineup, really, when you look at it, Betts and Martinez have had great years, the two of them. Okay? And they're both gifted players and gifted hitters. Benintendi's been awesome lately. And really for about a month now. Other than that, who do you look at and say is overachieving on this roster offensively? I mean, again, Moreland, I just told you, 253 over 25 games. He's been in the big leagues a long time. We know what he is. Xander Bogaerts, since that ridiculous start, is batting 229 since May 1st. 229. Nunez is hitting 249 for the year. Leon's hitting 241. Devers is 231 for the season. He's been bad all the way around. Christian Vasquez just recently started hitting a little to get him to 203. Jackie Bradley hit a little bit last week. Now he's cold again. He's 189 for the year. And then the last week, he's 3-for-23 with 9 strikeouts. So, like, I look at all these guys, and honestly, I sort of now start looking at the hitting coach. This whole launch angle thing, putting the ball in the air, we're going to do damage. How many guys in this team are hitting 240 or lower or in that neighborhood? If it's not for the two best hitters on this team, where are you? Like, I really start to. So they've gotten little bursts. Benintendi's, I don't want to leave him out because Benintendi's been hot as a pistol as of late. But I look at a lot of the guys who were middling or below average last year, and the change was supposed to ignite them. Or the sugar high from a new manager was supposed to ignite them. Bogaerts got off to a great start. He's now, again, 229 since May 1st. That's a month and a half. None of these guys are hitting like they did a year ago. Some of them. And they're not hitting to their potential. Like, again, so I look at the hitting coach again and say, is this whole launch angle thing, is this working? Devers looks like a 10 times worse player than he was a year ago. How is this happening? How all of a sudden are none of these guys able to perform to their ability again? Or are they just not that good?
All right. 617-779-0985. Tom on the Cape. Lead us off.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Maz, yeah, I think you're really touching upon what I feel with that lineup. You know, I was critical of JD, but I do like how he's been hitting the ball. Beyond that, none of these guys are showing up, which brings me to the reason of my call. You know, Hanley is not that make-or-break player for that lineup, but not only am I curious what your speculation is for why they didn't hold on to him, but I want to know who you guys think is the most authentic, impactful player. For me, I thought it was Price until that Yankee start where he left in the third inning, and it made me want to throw Astro from the Green Monster, but I'll hang up now and let you guys talk about most dynamic player. Thanks so much.
Most dynamic player?
I mean, it's Betts.
Okay, I don't give a rat's ass. Do they have enough guys who can hit?
I'm starting to worry about it a little bit. I'm not there yet because I want to see how this looks again when Betts gets back. I mean, Betts was having an unbelievable year. He's been the best player in the game. He's given you everything you could possibly ask for out of a player. And, you know, from the speed on the bases to hitting for average, hitting for power, creating all kinds of runs and opportunities for you. So, you know, you took an MVP caliber player out of the lineup. That's a big loss. That is a big, big loss. So one game back, might take him a little while to get his timing back, a game or two, whatever. He's usually pretty quick in terms of being able to reconnect. So let's see how that looks here over a week or so, and then I'll let you know. But I'm worried about, again, I'm not worried about Betts. I'm not worried about Martinez. And I'm not super worried about Benintendi. I think he's hot right now, but overall, Benintendi's a pretty good player. The other guys, I'm not sure that these guys are as good as we all think they are, or if they're getting the right type of instruction. Like the whole launch angle thing, I don't know what the hell happened to Rafael Devers. He was a big one for me. What happened to this guy? He was hitting balls off the wall last year, no problem. Now all of a sudden he's trying to jerk and yank everything and he's hitting 230. I don't get it. Something's wrong there.
617-779-0985. Harley in Westwood. Hi, Harley.
How you doing? I think one of the big reasons why Hanley hasn't been picked up by other teams, and just my inkling, is that He doesn't want to accept a pinch hitting role. And the only teams that are doing that are teams in the NL that like emphasize pinch hitting. And then anyone in the AL, I don't understand why they would want him, since he's probably going to want a full-time job, and the AL is crap besides, you know, New York, Boston. And,
well, what's Houston's DH? Yeah. What's Houston's DH situation?
Houston could use him.
Houston has no DH, Harley.
They've been one of the worst teams in the league in terms of productivity from DH all year long.
Where's Seattle?
Seattle's also near the bottom, and they could use him.
In DH. So
yes.
So there's good teams who need a DH who are going to be in the postseason. Hanley's postseason track record is terrific, and it feels like he hasn't even gotten a call.
And they could get him for nothing.
Free. $900,000 minimum salary. I just made that number up, but it's something like that,
it's
right?
It's like 550.
It's 550 grand. And the Red Sox are on the hook for the rest of the salary.
Right. It's even prorated, so it's two-thirds of that.
No one's made a call. It doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like there's even been a visit or a conversation or a story. Why? What happened? John in Dedham. Woof. Okay, you can call us back after you get out of the loading dock there. Let's grab Wally in Fall River. Hi, Wally.
Yeah, what's up, guys? I mean, you look at the bottom of this order. You got three guys, really. Sam Travis, Rusty Castillo, the richest guy in Pawtucket, which he's making about $11 million here. But you got three guys in limbo, same with Swihart. Now, you got 7 weeks to the deadline. I mean, you see Cora putting these guys in the DH, Vasquez and Swihart. I mean, you're not going to get nothing from these guys. It's been mentioned on the broadcast from about the bottom of the order. They had one little streak of about a week. But you're going to have to beef up the bottom of the order sooner or later.
Rusny Castillo. He's sitting right down there. He's hit over 300 the last 2 years. Rusny Castillo, I don't want his full minor league numbers. They don't serve my agenda at this juncture. And also, when he first got here, he was a bat out of water, and he, you know, had to change his whole training methods, I guess, or, you know, big adjustment periods for Rusny Castillo. Now he's been here 3+ years. He's hit over 300 for a year plus, solid down there at Pawtucket. You've got guys hitting under 200 at the bottom of your lineup. Why not Rusny Castillo? It's all about the luxury tax. You're paying him the money anyway, so it's not like you're adding salary or payroll. You're just creeping into a luxury tax situation. I thought they said they'd go into the tax. I thought the whole point of last year of being out of the tax is you could reset and creep into the tax this year.
Well, so they are in the tax, but when they go over 237, the penalties become even greater. So that's what the issue is now. They're in the tax. The problem is that once you get over 237...
I got it. Where are they now?
They're at about 230.
So Rusny puts them into the super tax.
The super tax. The close to it, because again, you're not going to pay him. I think his salary this year is 11. You don't have to pay the full 11, because
he
would only count for about 2/3 of that.
All I know
he'd put you right on the number, pretty much.
All I know is you sign him as the next big thing out of Cuba. Gets here and he can't play. Oh well, okay. You DFA him, no one picks him up. He's still with you. He's still down there and he's hitting. And you've invested all that money, and at one time you invested all those man hours, and why not give him a crack? And so the tax is the reason. Like, that's a frustrating reason not to see what he could do.
Listen, I hear you. And again, to me, the bigger picture thing, too, is as you sort of weigh it all out there, think of how much. Now, look, I don't believe personally in Rusny Castillo. Okay? But I also don't like the practice of them not making decisions based solely on money. I hate that. It's the reason I hate the Hanley decision. I hate, plus the fact that he can hit good pitching and hit in the playoffs. I hate it. Hate it with a passion. So, again, I don't believe in the player, but it's absolutely worth bringing up. And I look at it now and say, how are they going to improve? You've invested so much into this team to get to this point. What are you going to do now? Stop short? You get to this stage and you say, well, we don't want to pay Hanley, so we're going to let him go? I mean, it feels to me like they're all over the place in terms of whether they're in or they're out.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
One more strike to get for Craig Kimbrell to pin it down to 2. Struck him out. That's the ball game. The Red Sox win it 2-0. A combined shutout, some brilliant pitching in this one, and some key hitting in the 12th inning at last. And the Red Sox win it in 12, TC, 2-0.
Sox win, but was it too hard? Nick Cafardo writes in the Globe, and I think Jimmy Stewart would co-sign exactly. Beating bad teams shouldn't be this tough for the Red Sox. They went 3-3 against the lowly Tigers and White Sox at Fenway, and then they won last night. But Nick says it's been hard, too hard. Yes, we know on any given night anyone can beat anyone in baseball, and it's unrealistic to think that in this 9-game stretch against doormats, the Sox could go 9-0. But 4-3? And needing 12 innings for the fourth win? In these offensively challenged times, you have to wonder if the Red Sox may need to be thinking about adding offense. And I would concur. Instead of dominating this part of the schedule, the Sox have been doing their best to be mediocre. This one was way too hard. So, how do you feel about that? I will say there was some clutch bullpen work last night. Joe Kelly comes in with the bases loaded.
Big spot.
Bases loaded. I know it's the Orioles, but Joe Kelly with the bases loaded, coming with all that traffic, as they like to say. Don't tell me you weren't crapping your pants on that one.
Oh, no, I was holding my breath. No, you
so
know.
He got a strikeout with the bases loaded, and then it was Workman. I think Embry both got strikeouts with the runner in scoring position in extra innings.
Correct, against the Orioles. So this is my complaint about the bullpen. Now, look, you look at the numbers, the bullpen's been good overall. But in a big spot against a good team on the road, in New York and in Houston, how are those guys going to do? The Orioles are the worst offensive team in the league. Last in runs scored. Now, Kelly was Adam Jones. I still think Adam Jones has something left. But Kelly, to me, was, you know, coming in, walking into a horrible spot and get out of it. I give Kelly some credit there.
All right, we continue with your thoughts. Here's Jack in Boston. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Mike and Tony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to make a couple points. You guys are spot on with your analysis today, and I think the league kind of reflects that with the lack of hitting. It's kind of like in politics with Mr. Trump saying that he's like the next Lincoln or Roosevelt or Kennedy or whomever. He's just not. And these guys, when you look around the Red Sox lineup, that's not Mike Lowell at third base. And in Kansas City, it's not George Brett. And if you look around in our championship teams from the last three championships, other than Pedroia, who's the mainstay, I can't see really one guy other than Betts who's better than any of the guys, really, as a collective, the best from those three championship teams.
Okay, well, we don't need to, you know, because you're not playing the 03 Red Sox, so you don't need to do that. But just, Maz, do they have the talent? In the 2018 Major League season, do they have the talent?
I mean, I think they're a little short right now. And again, and I've been consistent with this all year. They're a good team. I don't think they're a great team, and what you have to compare them to is the Yankees and the Astros. So if you're lining up talent for talent, which of those teams are you picking? I would, out of those three, I'd pick the Red Sox third. So again, I still lean Houston because they've already won, and that lineup is just, you know, and the rotation now is filthy. The bullpen in Houston is vulnerable, but they were vulnerable last year, and they won it anyway. And the Yankees, to me, are stacked, absolutely stacked. So I might lean Yankees, were it not for the fact that the Astros are the reigning champion, but the Red Sox are third.
Here's Rusty down on line six on the Sox. Go ahead, Rusty.
Yeah, you guys are just talking about the money issues that the Red Sox seem to be dealing with, getting rid of Hanley, possibly not calling up Castillo. I have to wonder if John Henry's other business interests play a role in this, because Liverpool right now is one of the hottest teams in European soccer. They have probably the hottest young star, so... You know, is it possible that he wants to stay under this 237 super tax because he may need to use some resources for his other team that could potentially contend for Premier League title next season?
Yeah, see, I mean, I think that when one's doing well, everyone does better. I mean, these owners will tell you over and over and over again that the success or failure of one side doesn't affect the other. These are all separate businesses, but it all goes back to the same pocket. So I've never bought that. So, if Liverpool's doing well, that should bode well for the Red Sox, not vice versa. Sorry, no. If he's making more money, if he's qualifying for the Champions League, and whatever those financial ramifications are, and they're substantial, I think, when you make the Champions League, then, no, that should help the Red Sox, because he's got more money at the end of the day.
Yeah, and look, I think they're being genuine about the luxury tax penalties, and I'll look them up again. We did a lot of this last year. But over that 237 number, I don't think they want to go over it. And if they do... Well, then they should bring Castillo up. Once you go over, what's the difference? If you're willing to go to 238, you should be willing to go to 250, and I don't know where the next threshold is to, you know, to further increase the penalties. But my point is if they're waiting to say, well, we'll go to 240, Well, then, if you're going to go to 240, you might as well go to 245. What's the difference at that stage?
You just told me off the air there's another tax ramification of bringing Castillo up.
So, yes, because, look, this gets complicated, but when they took him off the 40-man roster a couple of years ago, they were able to wipe him off the luxury tax payroll. If they were to bring him back, he goes back on it, and I think he stays on it for the length of his contract.
What if they DFA him again?
So I don't think they can get out of it again. And he signed for two more years. One of those is a player option. And I think the last year of that deal is about $14 million bucks or something like that.
What kind of deal did this guy get?
7 years. He gets 7 years, $72
million. Oh, man.
Now again, the luxury tax hit is 10.4, okay, to make it easy.
But give him a shot.
But in terms of real cash, they got to pay him the real cash either way, so it's really the 10.4 that matters.
I still want to see it.
Right. If he's hitting around 300 these last couple of years in Pawtucket, he deserves another chance. Hell with the money. I don't ever want to hear money with this team.
Well, and to me, one of the big things there, Murray, is Bradley. Okay, because Castillo would presumably come up and play center, or if he doesn't, he plays left and Benintendi goes to center. Right? Either way, he's replacing Bradley. Bradley and Bogarts, to me, are killing them. Killing them. If you want to talk about the depth of the lineup, Betts, Benintendi, JD Martinez, they're all hitting. And Moreland effectively is what he's always been. In fact, you could argue he's a little better based on the hot streak, but overall, Moreland's a number six hitter, a seven hitter in a big league lineup. I'm not saying he's got to come out. The guys that lengthen the lineup for that team are Bradley and Bogarts. Bogarts is hitting .229 since May 1st. That's 6 weeks. With the way he started out, he looked like he was going to be a candidate to be an all-star, for crying out loud. Now he has slid right back to what he was. And Bradley, you're telling me you can't hit .245? A .190? All I need is .245 and about 17 homers, and you can't give me that?
Okay, we continue with your Red Sox thoughts, but we have to do this coming up next as well, and that is, finally, we have the fight that will save boxing. You've listened to this program, you know we've invested some in the heavyweight division in the world of boxing, and now finally, we have the fight that will save the sport. We'll do that next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Janta.
Magenta?
Janta. Janta.
Janta.
Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What do you do now to entice and somehow get Anthony Joshua into the ring so that the fans can see what they want to see and you can get the fight that you want so desperately?
You know, I've been waiting on that fight for a long time now. Me versus A Juice and Jay. Listen, mate. I declare war upon you. Do you accept my challenge? Or are you still going to squat as you? I've been waiting for a long time, baby. I know I'm the champion. I know I'm the best. Is you up for the test?
Finally, apparently he is. All right, so if you've listened to the show, you know we've invested in this. So it was a big day for those of us who've started to follow the heavyweight division and have started to follow specifically American Deontay Wilder and the heavyweight champion, or well, they're both champions of different belts, but Anthony Joshua, the Brit, who's also a part champion, they're finally going to fight. They're finally going to fight, reportedly. Reportedly, it's a two-fight deal. They're going to start with a fight in Wales, or in the UK anyway, in front of like 90,000 people, because it's Anthony Joshua, just bangs them out in Great Britain. And then there will be a rematch, and that'll be back here in the States. And I'm just telling you, if you don't know these guys, they're entertaining. If you haven't seen them fight, their fights are fun. And this is why I've invested in it. I'm rooting for boxing to come back. The little guys haven't done anything for me. I've been disappointed almost across the board with all the middleweights and the lower weight divisions. I need the heavyweights, and I love these two guys. I've started to watch some Deontay Wilder, some Anthony Joshua, and when you watch them, guys go down, people get hurt. It's like we remember, and there's good personality, especially this Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder's American. He's 40-0. That's who you just heard. 40-0 with 39 knockouts. Anthony Joshua, 21-0 with 20 knockouts. So you hear that? They've fought 61 times, 59 times someone's gotten their ass knocked out. So you don't have to worry about going to the cards or judges or any of this. Someone's going to go down, and someone's going to go down hard.
I'll tell you what. I can't believe. I say I can't believe. It was headed this way. But boxing being boxing, I thought something would get screwed up and these guys wouldn't be able to come to a deal. Now there's a chance you could have the fight in as soon as like 3 or 4 months.
Okay, so it could come in September, October, November. It'll start in Wales, and then there should be a rematch here in the States. And I am looking forward to it. Big time. Big time. And so should you. If you've given up on boxing and haven't gone back to it in a while, come back for these guys. Because if you're a casual fight fan like me, it's just what you need. Haymakers, people getting hurt, people going down, nothing going the distance, almost never. And bluster, jive talk, trash talk. This Deontay Wilder, my favorite. Play Wilder 1, Jimmy, my favorite cut ever.
You know, a lot of people don't think that I can fight in the inside, but I had to surprise them and show them. My grandma told me a long time ago I was anointed by God, and it shows even every time. Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
That was just so much there.
I love how he just drops that in. Yeah, my grandmother told me that I was anointed by God, and oh, I didn't mention that before?
There's no man that stepped in the ring against me that I haven't put on their ass.
I mean, if people have never seen these guys, you got to Google them. You got to see what these guys look like.
So Wilder, even though he's fought 40 times and is older, is wild. Like, he's... And I'm no boxing expert, but he throws from the outside, and he's all over the place, and I feel like he is a giant knockout risk against someone who knows what they're doing, which is what Joshua feels like, who is far more technically sound and a little more conservative of a fighter from what I can tell. But either way, he knocks people out, too. But this Wilder I love, and you know they've been going back and forth against each other, so you've had this whole, they're circling each other, so you've had this whole buildup as well if you've invested in it. It can be Wilder, too.
My goal is to unify, and I'm ready whenever those guys are. It seems like they ain't in no rush to fight me because I am the most dangerous man in the world. I am the most baddest man on the planet, and I prove that tonight. This solidified my top, this solidified my position at the top of the food chain, and soon there will be one champion, one face, one name, and he go by the name of Deontay Wilder.
I love Wilder. I can listen to him all night. All night, and just, you know, so he's been chasing Joshua, and Joshua's been ducking him, basically, for lack of a better term. Play the next Wilder cut, Jimmy.
The statement was that, you know, Deontay Wilder is definitely the greatest heavyweight and the baddest man on the planet. I want to unify the division. It takes two to tango in there. You know, I can't punch myself in the ring. I can't knock myself out. I need a body. I need a warm body in there. And he go by the name of Anthony Joshua.
So it's just
I want him. The world know I want him. Joshua definitely don't want to fight me. He fears this man right here from America.
Okay, so then that's the way it's felt, that Joshua's been ducking him. You want to hear from Joshua just so you know what the Brit sounds like? He sounds British. Go ahead. Here's after his last fight, which was a total dog. And this is why, I hope Deontay Wilder goes over there and knocks his lights out. Because I invested in this Anthony Joshua fight against Joe Parker a couple months ago, and Joshua just stood there, pissed me off.
Smoking Joe Parker.
This is what the Brit sounds like.
What would you have to do to beat him? What would I have to do to beat Wilder? Get him in the ring, and I'm knocking Spark out.
Spark out. Again, whatever that means.
I'm telling you, I always have trouble taking the Brit fighters seriously. I was the same with Lennox Lewis. They sound way too polite.
A little too proper.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Well, and this guy had no interest in coming to America.
You interested in trying to conquer America?
No. All these years, the UK fighters had to go to America. Everyone had to spend a heap of money to go to Vegas. We can do it in London, around Wembley, Cardiff. It's local. We're staying right here. We're staying right here. We're staying right here. Okay, so who do you want next if you had your pick?
Wilder. Or Fury. Either one.
Fury. So, anyway, that's Joshua. We finally have the fight. The fight that could save boxing. I don't know, is that too strong? You know what? Let's talk to someone who knows what they're talking about. Quickly, go, Jimmy.
It's the Felger and Maz 3-Minute Interview.
Talk to a guest without the grab ass in a short amount of time. Go.
Chris Mannix covers boxing for Yahoo Sports. He joins us on the expert hotline. Your thoughts on this fight? Is it really going to happen?
Well, I hate to pour cold water on it. Oh,
come on.
I'm still very skeptical. I spoke to someone directly involved in negotiations this morning, and they described it as more of a stunt on the part of Wilder and his management team in accepting this offer. Now, there was emails exchanged with offers, but there's no contracts yet. There's a lot of details that remain to be worked out. And my understanding for the last couple of weeks has been that Joshua was pretty far down the road in negotiations for an Alexander Povetkin fight. So, look, it certainly moves the ball, kicks the ball down the road, and boxes Joshua in a way I don't think he or Eddie Hearn want to be boxed in. But I still think we're a long way off from getting this fight.
So Joshua is the one who's running. Joshua is the one that's ducking.
Well, to be clear, it's Eddie Hearn who is Joshua's promoter.
Same thing. I don't care.
Well, you're right. You're right. I mean, I always maintain, Mike, that fighters want to fight. Like, Joshua would have no problem. Joshua believes he can beat Wilder and would have no problem getting in the ring. What Eddie Hearn believes is that he can, and this is accurate, he can make $20 million to fight Alexander Povetkin in the U.K., and move this fight down the road and perhaps make it even bigger in 2019. You can disagree with that. I do as well. I don't think this fight can get any bigger, but that's the mindset right now in the camp of Anthony Joshua.
So, Chris, the last time that we talked, I think I had said to you that I think Joshua would kill him. Since then, they've each had a fight, and Joshua did not look good. Who do you think could win the fight?
It's a pick 'em fight to me, because both these guys have enormous power, and both these guys have shown questionable chins. I would favor Joshua early just because he's technically better. He wouldn't fade in the same way Luis Ortiz faded in that last fight. And he lands on Joshua, it's good night. On Wilder, it's good night. It's not what Ortiz was able to do. But Wilder really showed me something, guys, in that last fight. I never believed, and I was ringside for it, I never believed he'd be able to rally after that seventh round. He did, and maybe we're seeing a maturation in him as well.
Your sport needs this, Mannix. Your sport needs it.
Look, Mike, I don't disagree. I'd be on the first plane, you know, running to get out there and go see that fight, but I'm just really skeptical. They're already looking at venues for September for a Povetkin fight. They're doing a lot of things that are telling me that Povetkin remains their top target for the fall.
Okay, finally, since you cover the hoops and you're here, I got to ask you, handicap LeBron to the Celtics. Any shot?
1%. And that's only if, in a phone call with the Celtics, LeBron's people say wants a 4-year deal. If LeBron continues to be a 1+1 type of guy, why would you break up your roster for him? I understand he's the greatest player in the world, but if he's only going to commit to you for 1 year, why do you change a team that is already on a championship path?
If he commits to 4, you think the Celtics would consider it?
I think they'd consider it if he said, I'm a 4-year guy, maybe the 5th year on a sign and trade. Why wouldn't you? If you can get him for 4 years, you absolutely have to consider it.
Would you move on from Kyrie if that's what it took to get LeBron?
I think you'd have to. Kyrie's a strange dude, and maybe he can find a way to coexist. But my understanding all along has been that Kyrie wanted out of Cleveland because he didn't want to play with LeBron James anymore. And why would that change in a year in a different city?
How real are the concerns about not being able to re-sign Kyrie here?
I think they're legitimate. I mean, I was the one that reported it last week that you know, there's no guarantee he comes back. But it could be considered on the other side, too. I mean, Kyrie, you know, these knee issues, everybody's kind of assuming he's going to be ready for training camp and all will be well. 3 knee surgeries in 2 years. What happens if he has some injury issues during next season? He's going to want the 5-year full max offer, $200-plus million. Not only might it be a Kyrie thing, but from a Boston perspective, do you commit to a guy, even though he's still 26, 27, for 5 years full max?
Chris, we're over our time. Thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
Thus concludes the 5-minute interview. Back to your phones, I promise, right after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.